I had all the joy and excitement of my annual physical in October. It was not that many years ago when the doctor would say, "How are you doing?" and I would say, "Fine," and that was the end of it. But now I noticed my list of ailments and aches and pains is growing, and we can fill a full hour. What I do know is there used to be a list of things I could do but do no longer. And in that, this year at least, I was thinking of the psalmist, "All flesh is grass." And I'm quickly proving that in my own body. But then again, so are you. We are not created to be angels. We are finite, we are mortal, we are limited, or as the Bible likes to say, short-lived, terminal flesh. And no matter what your age is, your body is heading in one direction. But it's not only that the body merely breaks down, but I notice that the body has a way of taking over, taking control. I mean, I'm feeling fine today, but let me get a blister on my foot or my tooth aches, and I will bore you to death with my troubles. I'm starting to sound like my grandparents, who seem to spend all their time talking about their aches and pains. Physical trouble consumes us. I mean, we like to praise our human higher nature, but just one tooth aching and the lower nature takes over. We're all tooth and no brain, all flesh and no spirit. I mean, again, I think of myself as a willing, rational creature. I think, therefore I am, as the philosopher said. I'm the master of my fate, the captain of my soul. I'm a free person living in a free country. I can do whatever I put my mind to. Yeah, who am I kidding? I told my doctor at the annual physical I'd lose 5 pounds. That was October. I have 8 to go. A piece of chocolate cake has me by the throat. My life is under control of an extra helping of mashed potatoes. My alimentary canal dominates my brain. I eat, I expel, therefore I am. So is it no wonder then, throughout the eons and the ages, the main agenda of most philosophy and most religion has been, what do we do about the flesh? Plato gave birth to a philosophy, the thought that you could think your way out of your flesh. You could, through certain philosophical contemplation, rise above your lower nature. I mean, what's real is the ideal. The world beyond or above or beneath the physical, material world. Close your eyes. Get comfortable. Think your way to that world. And I suspect that's a similar drive of our culture's obsession with spirituality, whatever that means. I mean, we've got these sort of two natures within us. One is the physical, the fleshy. The other, we say, is more higher and more noble. And so through certain spiritual disciplines or higher thoughts or uplifting sentiments, we can climb out of the muck and the mire of the carnal, the material, the physical, the fleshy, and rise up to something higher, a more spiritual realm. I think even that's why some people come to church. Can we be less jerked around by the physical, more motivated by the spiritual? Again, the Greek philosophers talked about our bodies as prisons. Our ethereal, higher spiritual souls trapped in a degrading carnal cage. And through contemplation, we might escape, at least for some time. We might rise up for a little while. Our enslavement to the physical, and then we could be free. That is until Jesus came. You heard the words from John's Gospel. The Word, the eternal, the divine, the Word creating world, Word became flesh and lived among us. This was his glory, John says. We need something done about our flesh, about our decaying, domineering materiality. And so, on a starlit night, Almighty God slipped in among us while we weren't looking, assumed the very flesh that we would like to shed, and was born among us. That's a rather peculiar and unexpected thing for God to do. Again, we tend to think of God as the antithesis of flesh. I mean, isn't godly when we're being spiritual? When we rise above the decadence of this world? Right? When we float upward? No, says Bethlehem and the manger and the birth. No, says the Word made flesh. We are, in truth, animals, frail, enslaved, finite, and limited. And we cannot rise up to God or anywhere else. Therefore, God has come to us. That's what incarnation means, a kind of enfleshment. That's what Christmas means. What Easter means is that Jesus has a body. Notice I didn't say he had a body, but he has one. Everybody knows that Jesus slept, he ate, he wept, he bled, and then agonizingly died. What everybody doesn't know is that the tomb was bare of Jesus' body. He was back in a resurrected body. He could come and go, unconfined by time and space, passing through doors, appearing at the most awkward of moments, but was nevertheless in a body that he was recognized to those who had known him before. His after-Easter body enabled him to share a number of meals, a number of arguments with his astonished followers, whether he was invited or not, which became for them a kind of irrefutable proof that Jesus has been raised from the dead. We affirm in the creed, we believe in the resurrection of the body. We're saying that we believe that the same God who raised Jesus from the dead shall somehow, some way, likewise raise you and me. But not as ghosts or disembodied, for there's no person without a body. And in saying that we believe that God will raise us from the dead, we believe in the resurrection of persons with recognizable personalities and recognizable bodies. If that's true, a few implications. If you're going to meet this God, you're going to need to do it here. You're going to need to do it now, in the flesh, because that's where God is. If you're going to worship this God in the flesh, raised from the dead, you'll need to do it here. And that's why you come here on festival times like this. We might be saying, well, I'd like to get close to God. I'd like to get kind of spiritual. But the church in her wisdom says to you, here, have some bread. Drink some wine. This is as godly as we get. For he came not to deliver us from our flesh and all the flesh demands, but rather to redeem it, to redeem us in our flesh, to sort of ennoble our fleshy, frail, faulty existence by his presence among us, by his real presence, by his real fleshy presence of his body. And in so doing, he makes our flesh a kind of sacrament, a means of his grace, an outward and visible sign of his body and his presence among us. Take and eat. This is my body given for you. In the manger that day, that evening, Mary and Joseph beheld God in the flesh, laying on a dinner plate of the animals. It's wonderful to me that the barnyard animals are on Christmas Eve are the first to engage in a long practice of Eucharistic adoration. They beheld his fleshy body. Take and eat. This was done to redeem us and to redeem our frail flesh. In such is our salvation. Thanks be to God, and Merry Christmas.